Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here at Voices for Change 2.0. We hope that you're having a good day.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks for being with us today on our humble little program. In the middle of June, can't believe that the year is almost halfway over already. That's crazy.
Yeah, I swear it seems like it was just Christmas.
Yeah. So, really quick, one thing that we wanted to do, because, you know, people have been having a tough time lately, from celebrities such as Anthony Bourdain, all the way down to, you know, friends of ours and people close to the show. So we wanted to give out the National Suicide Prevention Hotline for all you guys. And if you're struggling, call it.
For sure. And, you know, I have a couple of other resources, and one of them I actually take part in personally. And I can say that it's a great resource. But if you want, if you're in a dire emergency where you just feel like completely hopeless, please reach out to the Suicide Prevention Hotline. That number is 1-800-273-8255.
Yes.
There's another resource that people like to give out, and I like to give out. I actually trained with these folks for a little while, and it's for Crisis Text Line. And then you just text to 741-741, and someone will text back to you. Now, if you're not in a situation where you are feeling, you know, so desperate, if you just want someone to listen, we have another resource, which is called 7 Cups of Tea. That's I'm pretty sure it's 7cupsoftea.com, but you can Google that. It's a great resource because you don't have to tell them your name or any information. You just go on in there and someone will chat with you and go over what your experiences are. And, you know, I think it works out really well. And like I said, that's something that I'm a part of. I'm a listener on there. You know, as someone who survived a suicide attempt, I know how important all of this information is. And perhaps if I had, you know, kept up with you know, the times, maybe I could have contacted one of these resources and things wouldn't have been so horrible for me.
And the other thing too, and I can't stress this enough, okay, when someone is in crisis, they don't necessarily feel up to reaching out to friends and loved ones. They feel that they're a burden on those people, and that's part of their rationale for attempting suicide. So reach out to those people, okay? If you've got a person in your life that you know struggles, that is withdrawing, that is not engaging as much, you know, use your intuition on this, but reach out and say to them, hey, are you okay? I actually have a friend of mine that I plan on contacting this weekend that I haven't talked to in quite a while. And the last time I had communication with him, he was doing okay, but he seems to kind of disappeared since then. And I'm worried about him. And I want to track him down and make sure that he's okay. And he's a childhood friend of mine. So, you know, if you've got a feeling like that, you know, especially with any of your friends, especially with people that you haven't talked to in a while, just reach out. Sometimes that might be the difference between life and death.
Absolutely. I know that that could have helped me a great deal during a very difficult time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I tried to be there as much as possible for Beck, you know, but, you know, sometimes, you know, the more people, the better, you know, reaching out to all of us. We're all in this together, and, you know, we have to look out for each other.
For sure. So on that note, we would like to tell you what you have in store for us, for you rather, today. What we have in store for us, I guess, is appropriate as well.
But again, we're all in this together.
So we're going to be talking with a gentleman from across the pond that has created a website and a book as well by taking letters from folks that are in recovery and being able to publish those so that people that are not in recovery can read them and, you know, get a little sense of hope. And I think that's very important. That's why we're all out here doing what we do, is to be able to offer a sense of hope to people. And I messaged him several months ago. I just really thought that he would be great for the show, because mm-hmm. it's a new outlook on mental health awareness, I think.
Yeah, and you know, that's, you know, like we said last week, one thing that we try and bring to light is different outlooks with mental illness. You know, not everything works for everybody, but having awareness of all the different resources and outlooks out there, you know, you could come stumble across something that is awesome for you, mm-hmm. you know. So we want to try and bring as much of that to light as possible.
Absolutely. So on that note, we will bring in our guest. Good morning. Well, I guess it's evening for you, Mr. James Wythe. Mr. James Wythe, how
Hi
are
there.
You?
I'm good. Yeah, no, it's afternoon here. So, but good morning to everybody.
Have a happy afternoon there, sir.
Sorry you had trouble getting in with Skype there.
That's all right. That's okay. I got there in the end. Skype was playing up.
Now we're happy to have you. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Not at all. My pleasure. No, I love your shows. No, it's my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
So if you don't have any questions for us, we're just going to go ahead and jump right in.
Jump right in. Yep, I'm all ready. Go for it.
Okay.
Great.
All right. So can you tell us where your mental health journey begins?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, when I look back at my mental health, I can see it's been with me since a child, really. But I guess, you know, I'm now in my mid-40s. But I think, you know, when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, and certainly in the UK, you know, mental health wasn't really talked about. It was talked about in hushed tones, and it was people other than us. You know, it was other people who, you know, we saw as, you know, mad in inverted commas, and you know, abnormal in inverted commas. And I never thought of myself with somebody with mental health problems or mental illness. And, you know, until I had a huge breakdown sort of about 8 years ago. I mean, I'd suffered from depression and eating disorders, but strangely enough, I'd never thought of myself as somebody with a mental illness. I think because the stigma was so much that I didn't want that identity. Mm-hmm. And then when I became, you know, incredibly unwell about 8 years ago or so, 6 years ago maybe, things just collapsed. You know, I had a number of stresses. You know, my partner had been made redundant, and I'd moved house, and I was moved to a new city, and you know, things were very difficult. And I think when depression hit me, you know, finally it was hit me in the most extraordinary way. It was like being, you know, beaten about with a sledgehammer in my face, and the pain was so acute. You know, it was just so extraordinary. So I think that's even though I was kind of answering your question, even though I can see that it's been with me my lifetime, it's only been sort of the last 6 years that I've kind of, I suppose, self-identified as having a mental illness, I guess.
Do you seek treatment currently?
I do. Yeah, I do. So I've been on sort of, I think, probably most antidepressants, you know, I think in the last few years. So, yeah, I take antidepressants. So I'm in the middle of going from one antidepressant to another and the joy that that brings. Not much fun at all. No, not much sleep. I see a psychiatrist about every few weeks, which is usually to check up on my medication and my suicidal thoughts, which are quite strong with my particular type of depression. I've tried, you know, I've tried so many things over the years, you know, and as you know, some things work and some things don't. So I, you know, I exercise even though I hate it. You know, I go to the gym and resent every single turn of the stationary bike, but I do it and that helps a little. And you know, I garden. I mean, I've had acres of counselling. So, yeah, I am with a sort of I don't know what the equivalent would be in the US, but it's like community psychiatric team. I suppose on the more severe end of the scale, and they kind of, you know, keep me going as best as possible. Yeah.
So you have like a sort of a doctor and a caseworker and a.
Yeah.
Is that the type of thing that you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a psychiatrist and he kind of who's kind of my you know care coordinator, we would call it here. So somebody that kind of refer me to counseling when I need it and then sort of, you know, looks at my medication and then we can, you know, tinker with my medication. So yeah, I have kind of ongoing support, and I've had that support since about 6 years ago. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah.
What about family or friends? Were they supportive when, you know, you finally sought treatment?
Yeah, they were. I think, you know, I think it's that kind of coming out process, really. Some were amazing and incredibly supportive and incredibly worried, but incredibly supportive, and you know, have, you know, been alongside me, I suppose, in this process of recovery. And then, you know, there are people that have fallen by the wayside, you know, as it happens, you know. So people that I think found it hard to manage that I wasn't the James they thought I was, you know, and weren't sure how to talk to somebody about mental health and mental illness. And, you know, I was in and out of psychiatric hospital and, you know, just found it hard to deal with and still find it hard to deal with. So it was a process of, you know, those crisis points, you know, in your life. And I think it's a saying, when your mental health deteriorates so significantly that you find out those who are able to stick by you and those that can't do it. And and that's a huge process of loss, you know, as well as all the other losses that are going on in your life. So yeah, I have a very supportive husband and a very supportive close family and lots of supportive friends, and some that have, you know, gone by the wayside and partly through my choice of going, well, I know what I need around me are people that are not afraid to talk to me about depression, and that don't clam up, and that, you know, will ask me, you know, about it and what it feels like and how I am, and because it's such a big part of my life, and, you know, certainly when I'm acutely ill, it's the only thing that I can think about. You know, I need people around me that aren't shy to ask about, you know, suicidal thoughts or, you know, dark thoughts or how I'm feeling or medication or, you know, any of those things that help keep me alive. So I've had to be sort of choosy, really, about who's around me, and I think, you know, because depression is, you know, depression is telling us so, you know, clearly not to look after ourselves and that we're not worthy. We need around us a pool of cheerleaders, really, that are there, you know, saying the opposite of depression and are there to take care of us when we can't always do that for ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and that's something too that, you know, we see too, is, you know, there are, you know, people that you lose through the process of this, you know, and
I think that was something that I least expected out of my entire situation, right, was that people would suddenly think, oh, you know, a lot of it was due to the suicide attempt and being called, mm-hmm, you know, being called
selfish.
Selfish, a coward trying, yeah, to get the easy way, yeah, out of life. And
yeah, you know, mm-hmm, not really having understanding or compassion of what she was going through, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, the one thing that I've seen multiple times online, and I can relate to this so much, and I think it's, mm-hmm, true for anybody that suffers from a mental illness, is you're, mm-hmm, going to be too much for some people. Those aren't your people.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love
absolutely
that.
I think that's, yeah, very, it's so true that I think, you know, if people aren't able to be there, then yeah, then it's just not right. Because I think, mm-hmm, part of the process of, you know, having relationships, any kind of relationships, friendships, is to try and go alongside with them where they are, you know, as long as you can, and yeah, try and be there. And, you know, and if people can't do that, it's that huge, you know, I remember thinking, oh, I feel so selfish. And actually someone said to me, no, this is the difference between self-care or thinking about yourself is not the same thing as being selfish. Mm-hmm. And I thought, no, actually, yeah, you're right here. I do need to be told that. I, this isn't a selfish thing. I'm not excluding others. I need certain things just to stay alive, really. You know, it was that important.
Is self-care difficult for you? Meaning, do you get the feelings, yeah, of sort of guilt and, you know, maybe I should be doing something type stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, those travel with me anyway. And then when when I have sort of acute episodes, they are even stronger. So, you know, I certainly try and think of those as the voices of depression, and this isn't easy to do at all, I know, but I try and think of it as, you know, depression is telling me that I'm worthless. Depression is telling me that, you know, I should be able to do more. So I should be able to, you know, get a better paid job, or, you know, do, mm-hmm, better, or, you know, more successful, all those kind of berating poison things that depression tells you, any type of depression tells you.
It's insidious.
It is absolutely insidious, and you're absolutely right. And it's when you're in it, it's so hard to disentangle from the illness and you, because it's an illness of the mind, as you know. So it's I spend a lot of my time going, you know, almost mantra-like, repeating to myself, this is depression talking, this is depression talking, this is depression talking, in an attempt to try and distinguish myself from the illness.
Yeah, right. That's, you know, that's the tough thing is, you know, depression lies to you, you know, and
absolutely.
You know, there's been tons of times where Beck is having a day like that, where, you know, she'll say, oh, I'm worthless, I'm useless, I, you know, all these different things. And, you know, I'll try and talk her through it and be like, well, no, you know, you got this going on, and, you know, you need to take a day. This is one of your bad days, you know, but, you know, and that's the important the important thing is having a person in your life that can help talk you through those moments where you are so low, you know. I kind of lost my steam.
That's okay,
there.
Honey.
I lost my steam.
So, James, what was the catalyst for your recovery?
Looks like we just lost James.
Yeah, we lost our caller. Hopefully he will be able to call back in. I think we might have to make some choices about where folks are calling from. I think just for the way everything works for us. You know what I mean? It seems like we have a lot of difficulty with the UK as far as Skype and
I don't know what we can do to fix it, because we've talked to a lot of people over there that are great, and there's a lot of people over there that are great that we want to talk to. And,
it's just so hard
and being able to get them.
Okay.
Are you there, James?
I am. I'm sorry. I have no idea what happened there.
It's okay. We've been through it before.
Yeah, it happens.
Okay. That's good. Suddenly you disappeared.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Karen Unruh?
I'm not. No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
You should look her up. She's over in the UK also, and we interviewed her last year. And the poor thing, we kept losing her, and she must have called back in like 15 times. Yeah, and we'd be listening, and she'd be like, "Oh dear, I've lost them again." And we'd hear that and be like, "No, Karen, come back." And Karen, if you're listening, we love you and we miss you and we hope you're okay. But that's, it seems to be a bit of an issue for us. If we lose again, call back. We're here.
Uh-oh.
Did we lose you again?
Shucks.
Did you just say shucks?
I said shucks.
Wow.
I can't say anything else right now. Anything that needs to be said.
Yeah. we've lost James again. Hopefully he'll call right back. I don't know what's going on.
The Skype thing. I don't know. I think we really need to look into some other format for doing this.
I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Let's see what Scott says.
Scott's coming through.
Oh, okay. We're going to take a break and play a song. We're going to be listening to Start to Believe by Blake MacIver. And hopefully on the other side of that, we will have James back. So here you go. Stay tuned.
Staring down that long and winding road, felt like I could never start again. Flipping through the pages of my broken life, just remembering when. Before I was yours, I just stumbled through my feeble lies. But now you bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. And baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Looking up that mountain top, I said, how do we begin to climb? Wishing I could speed right through to all the joy, just manipulate time. But now I am yours, so I'll stop wandering through those feeble lies. Cause now you bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. And baby, you've gathered the pieces. Doubts close in, I know that you'll be there. I won't despair, my dream come true. Who knew? Baby, it's you. And though I falter, I lose control. Your soul pulls me through. Baby, it's you. You know just what to do. You bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. Maybe I'll start to believe.
I guess I'll start. I guess I'll start to believe. Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. We are having an interesting day here, and we hope that you're all still with us after some technical difficulties. We appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. Welcome back. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Mr. James Withy. I'm saying that right, am I? Am I, James?
Yeah, it's Withy. Yeah, I know. It's a difficult name. No, you're saying it perfectly.
Oh, it's not as difficult as mine. So we're going to go with that. You know, you wouldn't believe the mashups that we get with a last name like Lombardo.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, it's rough. But, you know, after 44 years, I think I've made my peace.
Yeah.
So
that's it. What are you going to do?
Don't have much choice in the matter. Not changing her name.
Nope. So if you wouldn't mind, please tell us about the recovery letters. Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, so it came from when I was in psychiatric hospital, and the few weeks before that, I had been asking my psychiatrist and the people, the sort of crisis team that were coming to visit me, and about where I could kind of get stories about recovery and about hope from depression. And everybody was very reluctant to say, you know, you can manage this, you can live a life alongside this, you know, some people do recover, you know, this is possible that it's going to get better. And there was just nothing there. And I, you know, psychiatrists would sort of give me recommendations for huge books of about 500 pages and on cognitive behavioral therapy. And I'm kind of going, well, I can't read a page. You know, I can't read any of this. My reading had just disappeared. And so I was sat, you know, in a kind of not particularly nice room in a psychiatric hospital where I live here in Brighton. And just thought, actually, if I'm going to recover, you know, and all that means, I need to hear other people's voices of recovery and of hope. And there just wasn't any. So I sat there going, okay, so I wonder if, you know, it's not there. Maybe I need to do this. So, yeah, the idea started really because what I wanted to help me, which, you know, was to hear from other people about what they had done and how they survived, wasn't out there. So I started by going onto social media, onto Twitter, and I wrote a letter to other people from me first when I got home from hospital, and then invited other people to write letters. And I it was a blog initially, and then a website, and now a book. And immediately I just got loads of letters in and lots of amazing feedback. And, you know, people wanted to write a letter about their own recovery. They wanted to reach out to other people, and the feedback that I was getting from people reading the letters was just extraordinary, you know. And I still get emails from people saying, you know, these letters have saved my life, you know, just amazing. And I think it's kind of because it's one person reaching out for another, and it's from one person that has, you know, is managing their depression to somebody that's suffering now, and, you know, and people want that connection, you know. They want to know from other people that have had those same feelings that they thought were only particular to them, that they are managing their lives and getting on with their lives. And, you know, some people are now better, and there's some people like me that you know, continue to live with it, but we are living our lives. And yeah, it was just a very simple but very powerful idea as it came to be. And it's sort of hit and helped a lot of people, which is just wonderful. And they helped me, you know. It was the one thing that I wanted, that, you know, when I was unwell, and it's the resource that I use myself. So, you know, I
flick through the letters on the website. I have the book by me at bedtime, and when depression wakes me up at 4 o'clock in the morning and thinking that, you know, life is horrendous and I can feel it hitting, I find a letter, some of the letters really hit home at different times for me, and I flick through the book and I find letters that really resonate and help. It was a really simple idea at a time where I was at my most desperate, but that has caught on, which is wonderful, you know.
Yeah, it's great. I was looking at the website last night, and I think it's a wonderful resource, you know. And I like, this was one thing that really caught my eye that I thought was really special, is that you've got letters in different languages. That's brilliant, you know, just,
yeah,
you know, because absolutely, you know, you've got people all over the world that suffer, you know, not just people that can read and write English, you know, so exactly. Being able to have something on there in Spanish or what have you, you know, is just, you know, that's, I think that was really well thought out on your part, and mm-hmm. you know, just making sure to have that up there, you know, it's
absolutely,
and it shows the sense of community, you know, it really does.
Absolutely, you know, this as you say, yeah, and it's something that I, you know, very much liking, want to expand in more languages, you know, and mm-hmm. yeah, and it is, you know, this is a worldwide epidemic. This is a worldwide problem, and you know, language shouldn't be a barrier to hearing about stories of hope, you know. It can't be, you know. I've had some amazing people around the world that have, you know, translated letters some of the letters for free, or written a letter in their own language. And I don't want that to be a barrier. So that's something that I'm sort of trying to push more, is to have as many letters in other languages as possible.
Yeah, I love that. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely great.
Thank you.
So how do you feel about the current situation as far as stigma surrounding mental illness? What are your thoughts?
It's better than it was, but we weren't starting from a great place.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, certainly here in the UK, things are changing just through a huge amount of campaigning. The Royal Family here getting involved in mental health, which, you know, has mm-hmm. It's one of those things in this country that has a huge impact. When they start to endorse things and talk about things, it helps mm-hmm. measurably. You know, it's better than it was. We've a long way to go. I mean, I truly think there's a long way to go. And I think someone said to me recently, kind of going, oh, well, it's all kind of okay now. And, you know, because we've done so much work and things are so much better. And I was like, you know, actually, if we lapse into complacency here, that's the dangerous bit. You know, we have to keep really, really tight about, you know, challenging ourselves and our language and, you know, our own, you know, I come with huge prejudice myself, you know, and it's a process of having to challenge ourselves, you know, and also mm-hmm. the stigma that, you know, is out there in society, you know. The thing that depression does is also it stigmatizes myself, if that makes sense. So, you know, the biggest stigma, my biggest stigma comes from depression itself, because it taunts me and it tells me I'm not worthy, and, you know, and I have to challenge that first and then help to challenge all the rest of the stigma. And I think one of the most powerful things to do is to come out about it, is to talk about it. And I know when I go around and do a lot of talks and public speaking and various things, and, you know, when I start to open up and say, you know, I live with depression and I've been in psychiatric hospital, I've, you know, I've had suicide attempts, suddenly, you know, that is such a powerful thing to do. And other mm-hmm. people go, oh, well, actually, me too. And my brother and my sister and my stepfather. And we realize that, you know, we are all connected in this way. And that's, if you can, if people are able to do that, it's one of the most powerful things to do. And because, you know, people then see us as human beings and, you know, with an illness, and but they also see all the other bits of us as well. They see our sense of humor and our personality and, you know, our kindness and all those things, and not just our illness. But it does just break down barriers, you know. And certainly when there's a huge barrier of not talking. And so I'm always, you know, really keen when I talk, I'll think, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't mention my suicide attempts, because, you know, maybe I shouldn't mention my psychiatric, you know, stays. And it's like, well, no, actually, that's stigma. You know, that's the exact stuff that we have to be talking about. And when we do talk about it, it just helps immeasurably. I think we've got a long way to go in lots of different aspects of mental health, but certainly with stigma. There's many more things to do, but it's better than it was. So I am pleased that we're moving in a direction that's positive. But I'm afraid of complacency, really, I suppose, is a way of summing it up.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern, is the complacency of it. You know, I think that, you know, everybody having the conversation is a huge step, but it's a first step. You know, there needs to be more done. You know, you mentioned the royal family talking about it now, and I think that's awesome, because, you know, they don't only have an impact in the UK. They have an impact on us as well, too. I mean, you know, I mean, it's, you know, we're not a colony anymore, but we still very much pay attention to what they say and do. I mean, shoot, the royal wedding recently was huge over here, and
I'm sorry, honey, but the funny thing is that we've very recently gotten into learning about the royal family.
Mm-hmm.
We learned about the abdication and, you know, the whole history, and got up to where, you know, the younger royals are now talking about mental health and mental health stigma and everything. And we just really have a great deal of respect for them.
Absolutely.
After everything that we've seen.
Yeah. You know, and you know, I think having these voices out there talking about it and shedding light and showing that it can happen to anybody and everybody, that really does tie us together, and it humanizes the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, absolutely. You know, the next step is really, you know, you see other diseases and they've got their lobbyists, they've got their people fighting for rights within the government, you know, cancer and whatnot. And, you know, that is one of our next steps, I think, is to have a voice there to make sure that our rights are covered as well. And our,
absolutely.
You know, we're getting what we need as well. You know, I think that's a huge next step too, you know?
I think that's absolutely true. I think it's absolutely true. Certainly in the UK, you know, we're still struggling with, you know, we're going to have a free national health service, but the health service here, the terms of parity of the amount of money spent on physical health and mental health is so different. And certainly I think certainly we're going to look back at this time, you know, years ahead, and it's going to seem medieval in terms of you know, what we knew about mental health and the kind of treatments. And I was speaking to my psychiatrist recently and saying, you know, I was having a particularly bad time, and I was saying, look, you know, what I want to do is just to go away just for a few days. I don't want to be in a scary psychiatric hospital. I just want to be able to go away, you know, somewhere residential for a few days just to get my head together and be looked after. And he was saying, yeah, we know that. We know that that's what everybody needs, and there is no money to do it. So we're very much in a position of, you know, the services just aren't there. You know, they know that more money is needed, but we are not meeting the needs of people with mental health issues. It just doesn't happen. And it's a very strange feeling, you know, when you're kind of stuck with knowing that you need something and it's just not there. So I think there's a lot of work to do with that. I mean, I'm not sure what it's like in the US, but certainly
it's worse.
Here.
Yeah, it's worse.
It's worse, really.
It's worse,
really,
yeah. It's bad.
Because if you don't have insurance.
Right, you know, that, and that's the real criminal thing of it to me is, you know, healthcare shouldn't be a way to get rich. You know, it really shouldn't, you know, and that's how it's treated here between the pharmaceutical companies and whatnot. Wow. And, you know, it's just bad. You know, I could go on a whole rant about it myself, and so we don't have the time. And I would drive the wife nuts if I did that. You know, she hates it when I go off on a rant like that. But so I'm going to segue into a question. So what would you say to someone that doesn't believe in recovery from depression?
Oh, you mean in terms of the fact that you can't recover?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would talk about my definition of the word, you know, and my definition of the word is very much about, you know, not everybody can recover, you know, but, you know, if you can add meaning into your life whilst you're living with depression, that's recovery. If you can, you know, hold down, you know, any kind of job or relationship or, you know, any kind of even day-to-day existence, you know, that is recovery. I think, you know, I've had a real mixed bag of, you know, experiences in terms of what people think about this. And, you know, I know some people that we call themselves recovered, you know, and because they're not on any medication and they don't have those kind of grave thoughts, but they are few and far between. And I don't think that's what's important. You know, I think what's important is that when we live alongside these kind of illnesses, you know, saying that we're in recovery is just a part of living, you know, it's a part of going and a part of acceptance. And I think for me, I may be going off on a tangent here slightly, but for me, acceptance in terms of my recovery has been one of the most useful things. Is I spent years going, I shall fully recover from this, and I shall do it perfectly, and it will go completely, and, you know, working really hard to go, I don't want this in my life, and I want it to go, and I don't want to be somebody who has depression. And for me, what happened was that, you know, I came to the conclusion that, you know, and as did my psychiatrist doing it together, we were going like, well, actually, this isn't going to go. This is a chronic illness. And I learned to live with it, you know, and I hate it, you know,
right.
I really hate it. But actually accepting that I am not going to be, you know, in my lifetime, it's not going to be something that completely goes was probably the hardest bit of my recovery journey, but it was one that released a lot of stuff. So it released a kind of sense of perfectionism to get better. And so I you know, it depends on how you define in recovery, but for me, I will, you know, whatever state I'm in, if I've got through the day, you know, then I think I'm in recovery, because depression is trying to take me down, you know, it's trying really hard to take me down. And, you know, if it's taken me, which it has done in the past, you know, a whole day to, you know, put a plant into my garden, you know, then that's recovery, you know. And if I've got to work with, you know, depression shouting at me that I'm worthless and don't go to work and stay in bed, then, you know, that's recovery. And those small achievements are not small. They're just enormous. And so, you know, it is a definition thing here, but I guess I'm really keen to say to people, look, those things that, you know, everybody else takes for granted when we do this with, you know, any kind of mental illness, it's such a huge thing to do. You know, having a bath, you know, I spent months, you know, not eating and not washing properly and not looking after myself. And when I do those tiny things, especially when I'm very ill, I really try and say to myself, this is a big deal. You know, this is a really big deal. And, you know, and that's what recovery is, you know, is about living and doing those things and trying to find some meaning. And, you know, and maybe also you know, building in some amazing times into your life, you know, and trying to enjoy them. And it's a whole mixture of stuff. So it's tricky. I'm aware that I don't tend to say to people, you know, when you have recovered.
Right.
But also, you know, as you know, this is a journey, and journeys are there good bits and there are bad bits and there are blooming awful bits and there are bits where it's better, and you know, I'm trying not to swear here. And
it's appreciated.
You know, that's okay. and it's but I think if we can share those journeys, you know, if we can share what it's like, then it. You know, mental illness is you feel so alone. But actually, if we can share those experiences of our journey of recovery and what it's like and the bad times and the good times, then actually it means that we're walking with each other. Right. And that's really important. I don't know whether I've answered your question at all.
No, you have. You know, you have. And that's, you know, it's outlook is a big part of it, you know, is... And it's like you mentioned, you know, trying to do those tasks, even when, you know, it's might be something mundane for someone who's not afflicted, but for someone who is, you know, getting up and taking a shower, it can be a huge deal. And absolutely. Being able to acknowledge that is, you know, that's huge, you know, and... So I completely understand where you're coming from with your outlook of recovery, and you know, I like that. I respect that. You know, absolutely.
Absolutely. So yes. Tell us about the next book that you have coming out.
Yeah. So we are kind of hoping to do a kind of series of books, really. So our next book is about loneliness, which. As we know, is so kind of linked with mental health. So what we found was that the power of these letters of writing from one person managing to one person suffering was so powerful that we kind of wanted to expand the idea, really. And the book has, you know, has had a lot of success, which is wonderful, which I'm just overjoyed about. And really, my publishers were really keen to say, actually, let's push this idea because it's been so successful. And so, yeah, so we're now sort of in the process of getting submissions of letters from, you know, all over the world. And, you know, and your listeners can write to me and send in a letter for in our next book. So it's a case of people who've experienced any kind of loneliness in our lives. And you know, that's pretty much all of us, you know,
right.
are writing to people that are, you know, feeling alone now and trying to alleviate some of those awful feelings of aloneness and loneliness that we're suffering. And certainly gender and loneliness in the UK here is increasing massively, and there's been a lot of reports and links about how much it shortens your life and, you know, the damage it does to your health. And we kind of are really keen. So I work with a professor of psychology in Edinburgh, and I do my books with her, and she's been doing a lot of research into loneliness. And yeah, we love the links with mental health, and we're just kind of keen to push that idea, that, you know, the same idea of letters and reaching out to people and saying, you know, this is, you know, it won't always feel this bad, you know. And it's that concept, same with depression, and that nothing is going to change, and when you're in that well of loneliness, it feels like that's how your life is going to be, and it's not going to get better. So we wanted to apply those same ideas.
Very cool.
Oh, absolutely.
Very cool. Yeah, it's definitely, again, it's insidious, this feeling of loneliness, and it does go hand in hand with, you know, depression. You know, I know on on days that I've had down days, you know, even when I'm, you know, especially when I'm at work, you know, and I deal with the public at large day in and day out, you know, to feel disconnected, you know, and all I want to do is stay at home and be with Beck. And
yeah,
you know, I'll call her and say, hey, I'm having a bad day. You know, I just need to hear your voice, you know,
sure.
and that's my lifeline, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and she goes through the same thing, you know, and you know, she, hey, I just need to hear your voice and, you know, take a few minutes to talk. And, you know, being able to have that feeling of connectedness, you know.
And
so the fact that you're putting out something, that you're working on something about loneliness, you know, hopefully, you know, the readers of that book will, you know, find a connectedness to the people that have provided material for the book. And
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like altruistic to me. You know, I think it's awesome, you know, that you guys are working on it, and, you know, we're excited for when the book gets done, and, you know, when it's out, we'd love to have you back so you can, you know, definitely promote it too.
Yeah,
I'd love to. Thank you. Yeah, I think feeling so disconnected, either through, you know, depression or through loneliness, you know, that I think that feeling is quite similar to each other, actually, when, you know, the loneliness of depression and the loneliness of not having connections and people around you. And, you know, we're inbuilt to be such, you know, social creatures that, you know, when that's not there for people, then, you know, again, it can feel like being poisoned, you know, and that there isn't any hope. And so, yeah, we're just really hoping that, you know, we can supply the message of hope to loneliness as you know, as well as depression. And so, yeah, we're getting letters in at the moment. There's still details on the website, and yeah, we're hoping that it's, you know, again, it's gonna help a lot of people just by saying, look, we've been there as well, and this is not just an experience that you're having. You know, it's an experience that millions of people around the world are having,
right.
And hoping that those messages and those stories can help people. Yeah,
indeed.
So tell us how people can reach out to you on social media if they have questions or want to make a submission.
Yeah, absolutely. So the website is www.therecoveryletters.com, and all the details, so people can submit a letter to go on the website. So we put letters on the website all the time, and we have about, you know, 70 or so that we rotate, so people can submit a letter about their depression and a recovery letter to depression for the website, and there's details on there if they want to submit a letter about loneliness for the book. All the details are there as well. Twitter, it's at recovery letters, so people can message me on there, and my email address is on the website, or they can direct message me. So yeah, you know, it's always amazing to hear from people on social media, and I think, you know, there are lots of faults with social media, but certainly, you know, in terms of you know, spreading the message about hope and about recovery and about what it's like to have depression, social media has been an amazing vehicle. So yeah, it's always wonderful to hear from people.
Indeed. Yeah, you know, we've seen a lot of relationships get destroyed by social media, of course, but, you know, the community, especially on Twitter, is unbelievable and completely supportive, and
absolutely,
you know, it's unstoppable, you know, so it's great.
There's a lot of us out there.
Yeah,
a lot of us out there. There is.
Yeah, and James, where can people get the book, Recovery Letters book?
The first one.
Yeah. So you can go. So it's available all over the world, basically. So you can go onto in the US. You can go onto Amazon, Barnes and Noble have it as well. So yeah, either of those I know are definitely selling it.
Cool.
So yeah, my publishers, Jessica Kingsley, are release books in the US. So yeah, they can get it online. I don't know about how available it is in bookshops. I'm not sure. But certainly you can get it through the internet. But yeah, it's available on Amazon throughout the world, basically. But
cool.
Yeah, I know definitely Barnes and Noble are selling it. So yeah, absolutely, it's out there, which is wonderful. And, you know, if people had read the book and then want to submit a letter to the website, do. You know, what I love is that, you know, people that read the letters online initially, then submitted the letter for the book, and, you know, their own letters reaching out to people. And so it's a lovely process of, you know, people gain something from the letters, and they write a letter themselves, and it's sort of this sort of peer circle of support
and hope, which is wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And needed.
Yeah, and needed. So,
looks like our time is done for
yeah.
today.
Yeah,
thank
and it's
you.
Unfortunate because we've so enjoyed talking to you, James.
I've loved
we
it
really
too.
Have.
Thank you so much. It's
you know,
been
we,
great.
We love it.
Thank you for everything that you guys do because it's so important and your podcast is fantastic and you know I love listening to it, so thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, again, like I said, we'd love to have you back anytime. Especially once the second book is done, you know, we want to promote
that's
the hell perfect. Out of it. And
just give me a shout. You know where to find me.
Absolutely.
I will.
Absolutely.
I will.
Stay on the line. We are exiting here
uh-huh.
with Damian Escobar with a song called Fire to the Rain. We'll catch you guys next week.
Yep.
Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.